Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the burgeoning political scandal in New Jersey following the release of emails from Governor Christie's deputy chief of staff that indicate the governor had advanced knowledge of a traffic nightmare on the George Washington Bridge that appears to have been engineered as political retribution by Christie's staff against a mayor who did not back his re-election. An expert on New Jersey's rough-and-tumble politics, Ruth Mandel, the director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University, joins us to get some clarity on whether this Republican frontrunner for president in 2016 is, as the headlines proclaim, the bridge troll. Then we will speak with Troy Williams, the executive producer of Radioactive, a progressive talk show on KRLC-FM in Salt Lake City, who has been named by the Salt Lake Tribune as the gay mayor of Salt Lake City. We will discuss the uncertainty in Utah for 1,300 gay married couples now in legal limbo following the Supreme Court stay on same-sex marriages in the state while Utah appeals a lower court ruling allowing the unions. Then finally, while Republicans in Congress have tried repeatedly and unsuccessfully to kill health care reform, we will examine the success of Republican obstruction of Obamacare at the state level, where thanks to the Supreme Court decision, governors are free to decline federal Medicaid money and not create health care exchanges. Theda Scotchpole, a professor of government at Harvard University, whose latest research for the Scholar Strategy Network illustrates how partisan ideology has suppressed enrollment under the Affordable Care Act, joins us to discuss the impact and human cost on millions of people in 23 states who are being denied health care because of petty political spite. Joining us now is Ruth Mandel, the director of the Eagleton Institute for Politics and the Board of Governors Professor of Politics at Rutgers University. A founder and director of Eagleton Center for American Women and Politics. She is the author of numerous publications about women's changing political roles, including In the Running, The New Woman Candidate. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ruth Mandel.
Thank you very much.
And apropos your book, Ruth Mandel, In the Running, The New Woman Candidate, of course, it's no secret that Hillary Clinton is likely to be a presidential candidate in 2016. It's also no secret that Governor Christie is likely to be a presidential candidate in 2016. So tell me, how much is this burgeoning scandal, now known as Bridgegate, likely to affect his chances?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens in the next few days and in the weeks that are ahead of us. But at the moment, it looks like a very serious threat. He certainly has an enormous crisis on his hands. And how he handles it is going to tell everything about his path forward. He's certainly interested in, everyone here assumes that he's interested in pursuing the nomination. This is the first time that the governor has faced anything like, I mean, he's faced many challenges before, both on the policy side and on the political side, but this is the first time that he's faced anything this big and this dangerous and potentially damning.
And in the statement that was released late Tuesday afternoon on his official website, he says – he used the words, "It's unacceptable, I'm outraged, I'm deeply saddened, it's completely inappropriate, unsanctioned conduct, made without my knowledge, et cetera, et cetera." But earlier, he had, in effect, gone along with a cover story saying that the bridge closures were a part of a kind of traffic drill. So is that going to come back to haunt him, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, in this day and age, everything one has ever said, done, worn, smiled at comes back to haunt you. So everything is recorded, and even in the coverage so far, which has been amazing, I think it's been a lead story in every program so far this evening. There have been clips from some of his statements that are going to be problematic for him to reconcile with what he's saying today. The record is there of some of the things that he said, which is true for everybody who's running for office. I mean, that's the climate today. It's the situation for political people.
Well, but, you know, already it's been called, Bridgegate. But, yeah. You know, the mother of the gates, of course, was Watergate.
Right.
And what happened at Watergate was that the minions were sacrificed first, and then eventually it gets up to the big guy, right?
Right. Yeah, right. And we will see. I mean, this is really, despite how big this is today, it's a fairly early stage of unfolding. More will happen tomorrow. And the governor, I think something really so far that's very important is that for most of today, he did not respond and no one knew what he was going to say. And everyone was waiting for him to come forward. When he did come forward at the end of the day, he made a statement, but he did not stand himself in front of the cameras and the microphones. He didn't take press questions. He didn't hold a press conference. He issued a statement. He, in the statement, I'm sure you're familiar with it, said that what happened was unacceptable, that he was outraged, that he had been misled. All of that being true, he really needs to get up himself in public and respond to questions. And so that has yet We have yet to see what happens. There's a lot of investigating that has to be done. Unfortunately for him, even if he's being 100% candid, and he's a man who likes to be candid and is very proud of how direct he is, even if he is being 100% candid, honest in this statement, there are going to be lots of questions about it, his credulity. It makes him look, if he didn't, for example, if he didn't know what was going on at all, then there are going to be questions about, well, how could you not have known? He's a very strong leader. That would make him look weak. His message has been that he's in charge. If this is true, how could his staff have operated without his knowledge? He's going to have to deal with those kinds of questions. If they did operate without his knowledge, how can people have confidence in what he says is strong leadership, and it has been. I mean, there's been tremendous loyalty on the part of people who work for him, and he's had a very, very tightly run administration, something that many of our media people in New Jersey have commented on. So the message has been controlled, and people have been very unified, and his staff has always been enormously supportive of him and loyal in ways that people have remarked on.
Again,
so
I'm
put some cracks in all that.
Sure. Again, I'm speaking with Ruth Mandel, the director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics and the Board of Governors, professor of politics at Rutgers University, a founder and director of Eagleton Center for American Women and Politics. She's the author of numerous publications about women's changing political roles, including In the Running, The New Woman Candidate. So what we know, though, so far is pretty, well, it's almost like sort of mafia behavior in a way. It's certainly very petty, creating a traffic nightmare for several days on the George Washington Bridge, the main entree into New York City. It appears to be engineered as political retribution by Christie's staff against a mayor who did not back him for re-election. And, of course, he won so handily, I don't even know why they needed to do that. What's your sense then of go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's of course one of the ironies here. Whether he was involved or not, it didn't really need to be done. One of his central messages has been that he is a bipartisan leader, and so yes, he wanted support endorsement from a Democratic mayor. On the other hand, there were many Democrats, many mayors who did endorse him in this campaign. And the other, so the mayor of Fort Lee was certainly, there were many other Democrats who did, and the mayor of Fort Lee was not crucial to his reelection. In addition to that, the community of Fort Lee voted for him. So it's a really ironic and sad thing. Fort Lee was not crucial in any way. His people didn't need to do this. At the moment, I think we're facing that classic with him. What did you know? When did you know it? He has in his first term, he's entering a second term and an inauguration very soon. as governor, will have to reassure the New Jersey citizens that his concern is to protect and work for them, and that he's capable of leading the state in their interest. He's always expressed that message, and I think, you know, that is the message that they will want to hear, and that's the message he'll need to deliver in a credible way. As a national figure, he's going to have to introduce himself as someone who's capable of handling this level of political crisis, this kind of national attention. What happened in Fort Lee is somewhere between, I'm not sure what yet, someone here has said that it'll be a Saturday Night Live episode, and I'm sure it will be, but something in between, you know, absurd mischief, scoundrel behavior, sort of at one extreme, and at another, threatening, very threatening to people. It could have, in some ways, he's lucky that people didn't die as a result of this, that we are hearing now that some first responders couldn't get through during these traffic jams. Fortunately, as far as we know so far, there's been no tragedy as part of it, but it nonetheless is inexplicable that something at this level would have been done. And I'd have to say also that governing is different from campaigning, and the people who were working for him in roles in the government should have known what it means to govern as opposed to what it means to work in a campaign, and they stepped over many, many lines here.
And much of this evidence that's come out is in the form of emails within the Christie staff, one of whom is going to be testifying, I believe, tomorrow before the New Jersey legislature. When you say, Ruth Mandel, that there weren't any victims, of course, one of the emails indicates...
Well, there were, yeah.
Yeah, one of the emails indicate that one of the Christie's officials referred to the kids that were missing school, because after all, starting on September the 9th, 4 days of gridlock paralyzed this bridge. And this gridlock was created by... on purpose, and Christie himself said that it was a part of a fictional traffic study. But the long and the short of it is that one of the emails of one of his officials referred to the kids that can't get to school as, these are the children of Buono voters. And, of course, that was Barbara Buono who ran against him, who he trounced. So,
there were many, many foolish and irresponsible comments made, and because these messages were subpoenaed and these have now become public, we get a glimpse at the kinds of conversations that probably go on every day at every level that are really embarrassing and sometimes damaging and certainly not up to the standards of anything we would expect of public officials. But what I meant by nobody being damaged is that, thank goodness, at least as far as we know, we haven't heard of some tragedy that resulted from this. That is not in any way to suggest that this was not a terrible thing for the people who suffered the consequences of these delays and the cost to the town and so forth. I'm sure the governor would feel the same way. I do think he cares about the citizens, and I do think that his performance during the period after our Superstorm Sandy, which is what endeared him to so many people here in New Jersey, I do think that that's right at the heart of what he cares about. But this has raised a lot of other questions about the people who serve him and about what he has allowed to happen in the circle of people around him. And he's going to have to deal with that now.
And one of his deputy chief of staff, Bridget Ann Kelly, wrote on an email saying, time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee. And the reply came from David Wildstein, the governor's appointee to the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which controls the George Washington Bridge. He said, got it. Now, he's the guy that's going to be testifying tomorrow before the legislature. What do you expect to happen there, Ruth?
Well, first of all, as far as I understand, his attorney is going to try in the morning to prevent that. So we don't know if he's going to be testifying. The legislature is intending to have him testify, but we just don't know that yet. So we'll see what happens if he has to testify tomorrow. But if you could draw a line, I think this is really important. I mean, if you could draw a line and say that his behavior and Kelly's behavior was both irresponsible and foolish and overzealous on behalf of someone that they're devoted to. And this is true, by the way. I mean, it's important for people, I think, to understand. It probably ultimately is irrelevant in this situation, but important for people to know, and I've seen this time and time again, there are people who are extremely loyal to the governor. They care about him. They're loyal to him. They've worked with him for years. And they're willing, they're obviously willing to do things that they shouldn't be doing. And whether or not he has sanctioned that is something that he's going to have to, you know, he has said he did not, and he's going to have to stand behind that and in some way convince people that that's true. But these are people who were just, I have no idea what animated or what made, you know, started all of this, but they're not the kinds of people who should be on the public payroll because they have terrible judgment, and they're making political decisions and bad political decisions in situations in which we're talking about governing and not about politics and petty retribution.
So, Ruth Mandel, again, the director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics and the Board of Governors, Professor of Politics at Rutgers University. The governor is going, he is the chairman of the Republican Governors Association. He's due to tour the nation in this role. I imagine it's like those press conferences at the White House when a visiting head of state arrives, and if there's a scandal du jour, that whoever that person and that country that's represented there in the White House gets short shrift, and all the reporters want to know about the scandal. Is that going to happen to Christie? I mean, he can't duck this. Obviously, he's ducked it for most of the day, and as you say, he didn't show up today, but presumably he's going to...
The national political scandal for him, and it's first and foremost what he has to deal with, and until he deals with that in a way that puts it to rest, is acceptable to people, if he can do that, if he can get beyond it, then he can go back to not only governing New Jersey. I mean, he's just been reelected. He's about to be inaugurated again for his second term. So there's a lot of attention at home, of course, to his service as governor. But in his role at the Republican Governors Association, there are a whole other set of decisions that will have to be made nationally, not only on his part, but by governors around the country who will be depending on him to come in and support and help them in their states. And, of course, the outcome here, as this unfolds, will affect that. If you're the governor of another state and Governor Christie is coming in, you want him to come in as someone strong and not someone who's been weakened in a devastating way by this scandal.
By this butterbing politics, right? That's what it feels like. Well, I thank you very much for joining us, Ruth Mandel.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ruth Mandel, the director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics and the Board of Governors, professor of politics at Rutgers University. She's a founder and director of Eagleton Center for American Women in Politics and is the author of numerous publications about women's changing political roles, including In the Running, The New Woman Candidate. We're going to take a brief station break, and then we'll go to Salt Lake City to look into the legal limbo that 1,300 gay married couples are now in.